The following was originally broadcast on Northumberland 89.7 FM. For more podcasts and learn more about us, go to northumberland897.ca. And thank you for downloading this podcast.
On today's program, we will hear the second half of Madeline Corelli's interview with Linda Nazareth, who is an economist, demographer, and the author of Work Is Not a Place. On today's program, they will be discussing changes in the workplace within today's turbulent world. Now here's Madeline.
I'd like to welcome back Linda Nazareth, our expert on the economy and on employment and matters of the world of work. And Linda, welcome back. I so enjoyed talking to you in part one of our interview. And I want to build on what we were talking about before, which is, you know, purpose, et cetera, for people. So if we have many older workers looking for work, and I believe we do, what do you think is the best way to assist them with finding that employment?
Yeah, you know, it's a tough one because we supposedly have a shortage of workers. We supposedly have a lot of roles to fill. And like, yet if you talk to older workers, they'll tell you it's not that easy to come in. And it seems to be a bit of a disconnect. And I'm not sure exactly what's causing this. There's probably some like all out bias, which they can't fix. But I think some of it comes to back down to demonstrating that they are willing to do anything. They are willing to retrain. They are willing to show that they're cutting edge tech people. And they're not, people aren't always willing to do that. That it's, it seems like it's difficult to always be on top of things as you get on into your career. But it seems these days that's a bit of a necessity. Also, what I find is that there's a mindset amongst older people, particularly, maybe everybody, that they have to be full-time workers. And it's somehow a failure if they're contractors or they are working part-time or in terms of gig work. And I don't think of it that way. I think that's kind of nice. There's some flexibility there. Obviously not the employment security, the income security everybody needs. But I do think maybe we need to get away from the mindset that the only way to work is to have a full-time permanent position, because we know nothing is really permanent anyway.
Yeah, isn't that strange? But that's so true. And you do mention gig work in the book, and you talk about older workers kind of being an ideal candidate for gig work. Could you explain a little bit more about that?
Well, sure. As you get older, not everybody wants to work full time all out. Maybe they want to do a project and then take a few months off and go away somewhere warmer. Or maybe they want to not work full time hours. They want to have a couple of days of work and other days not. I know some people are listening to this and think, well, that's really great if you can afford it. And it's true. Not everybody can, but some people can. And it's nice to have a choice. So it's not all or nothing. I have to do the 60-hour week or the 40-hour week, whatever we're calling it, or I have to retire. That there's a way to ease out of it. And some organizations are open to that. Some are less so. But you know, it can benefit everyone because there's things older workers bring to the table for sure. And it's not necessarily the best idea to say, you know, we're done here. Keeping people around in some capacity, I think, can work out for both parties.
Yeah, I was thinking that too, that often they have a lot of knowledge stuck in their heads. And with that, when they leave, if they leave the organization, they leave with all of that knowledge and skill as well. And passing on that knowledge and skill is not a process that's easily done. It's not something that you can sort of write out everything that you know. It requires more of a relationship building between other people who work for the organization and the person who is thinking of leaving, just so that there's a sharing of knowledge. What about cross-training? Do you think that's of value if people are thinking that they might be retiring?
I mean, cross-training, training people who are in the organization?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's certainly a possibility. I think in general, we need more dialogue between different kinds of workers, maybe cross-training between different departments as well as between different generations. And I think it's a failure in a lot of companies that we don't have that people work in kind of silos and we don't have a lot of those conversations.
Yeah, I was thinking that too, that especially with a shortage of workers, that it would make some sense to try and try and cross train, and that may be the wrong word, Linda, but to try and make sure that people know a little bit about everything so that the roof doesn't cave in when a person leaves with significant knowledge of the job.
Yeah, and that's actually true too for worker satisfaction, that you can't always give more money. You can't always give a promotion. There's only so many managerial positions at one time that are open. But people are often happy to move laterally, learn something new, to expand their mind a different way, see the organization a different way. It's one of the factors that is sometimes cited as keeping people from quitting, that they feel like they're being challenged and given more responsibility. And so, you know, it's something to think about.
Yeah, you mentioned also that that a person, an older person looking for work, should be, you know, confident and willing and offer their willingness to work and be flexible. But you also mentioned tech skills and how important having those tech skills really is for the employer and for the job seeker. How are you suggesting that older workers upgrade their tech skills while they're looking for work?
I think, you know, nobody should be afraid of tech. And sometimes it isn't fair, but there's an assumption somebody older may not be as cutting edge as they could be in terms of tech skills. So you want to demonstrate that you know these things, that you're up on all kinds of technology. And, you know, training in that has gotten a lot easier than it used to be, that there's a lot of online courses that are inexpensive and you can work at your own pace, whether we're talking about lynda.com or LinkedIn Learning or Udemy or anything else. Like almost anything you might want to learn, you can get a course for, you know, $20, $30, $40 and kind of just start on that so you can demonstrate that you have some of these things. And I think people probably would find it to their benefit that they are learning and that it's not as difficult perhaps as they thought it was.
Agreed. Also good for brain stability. So moving on to what I'm interested to hear what you think are the growth jobs coming up in 2022 and way beyond. Where do you think those jobs are going to be?
Yeah, it's always hard to forecast actual jobs. It's easier to talk about skills. But if you're talking about the really short term, I mean, clearly we have a need for healthcare workers, people who do one-on-one things with human beings, because that's an area that is only going to grow with an aging population. We still have a need for tech workers. If you look at where the hiring has been over the last year and a half, it's very clearly in jobs that require university education, that pay more, that tend to be what we call professional. The people who've gotten hurt the most in the pandemic are the ones who do not have necessarily those skills. It's been, it's broken down very clearly between the two, that at the same time that we have people seeking work and being really unhappy with that, we have others that are being headhunted. So, I mean, it's something to think about in terms of acquiring as much as you can in terms of education, in terms of tech training, and looking at professional, scientific, healthcare jobs where there is a lot of demand.
Yeah, and do you think those fields would be open to older workers as well?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. You know, some jobs, even nursing, is a physical job, and people tend not to want to do those things later in their lives. But you know, that's it's always a possibility when there's willing people to do them. I mean, but it is a big ask to ask people to completely retrain if we're talking about being 50 and starting over and training in anything. You're probably better off staying in your own field or your own company and figuring out what you can do internally. But for those who want to completely retrain, I don't know that's a bad idea at all.
I agree. I think I don't think anybody's really too old to learn new skills. But if we're talking about going back to school on a full-time basis, I think there would be a problem getting older workers to do that just because there's no money for the years that you're away in school. But yeah, as you said, there's so many courses available.
Right. I mean, I don't think that we should necessarily be thinking, though, in terms of, you know, 3 or 4 year university courses for everybody. There are other ways to retrain.
Agreed. And also, I like that you think that one-on-one people connected careers are going to be a growth sector as well, because I believe the same thing. I think that the quote unquote human services, which encompasses a lot of different careers, are going to be not useful for robots and really important for human beings to help other human beings.
You are listening to Aging, a New Reality on Northumberland 89.7. And now we return to Madeline Corelli and her interview with Linda Nazareth.
Can I ask you a question about retirements? We know that there will be a lot of people retiring shortly, if not already. And I understand that the biggest bulge of boomers right now are age 62. So I think I believe you said in your book that you expect people will work longer than 65. Is that correct? You thought that?
I think many people will, just because they don't necessarily have the resources that they want to have for retirement. So if they can, they will try and stay in the workforce. It's not always possible. We know that people don't always have a choice, and there's involuntary leavings. But I think you're starting to see in the numbers that people, there's a higher labor force participation rate above 60 than we're used to seeing.
Yeah, I agree with you. And we also know that retirement for the individual who is retiring brings with it a lack of earning potential. Do you think that boomers can still think about retiring at 65 or before?
Yes, it depends on the individual case, but the boomers as a generation have been more volatile in their choices than earlier generations. I mean, it hasn't been get a job, stay there for 40 years, stay married, stay in the same house. We know there's been divorce, there's been recessions where people have lost jobs, had to start again. We know there have been a lot of things going on in the financial markets where people have lost money. So a lot of boomers are not necessarily in a place where they can automatically retire at 65. And of course, the biggest factor is defined benefit pensions are not what they used to be. There's a minority of people who can just look forward to that check every month as perhaps their parents did. So we're in a different space for sure.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they'll have enough savings. That was my question. You know, if you retire at 65, if we think that people will live into their 90s, what kind of savings would you have to have in order to survive into your 90s just to pay for, you know, your home and your car and your insurance, et cetera, your food? It would be a crazy amount of money, I would think.
Well, very low interest rates, which is what we have. Of course, it would be a very high number. Boomers, though, they do have a lot of wealth in their homes, and that's a possibility that they'll tap into that. And there are government pensions and the like. But, you know, here's the thing is, there's a huge variation between boomers. It used to be much more of a monolith. Everybody had pretty good or at least stable prospects after 65. Now I think we're going to look at people on one end who are very, very well placed for retirement. They're wealthy. And people on the other end who are a long way from wealthy. So a much more mixed up kind of market than we have seen in the past.
Yeah, can I ask you a question about guaranteed income? Because I know that that's been bandied about by various governments at various stages across this country and in other countries as well. How does that work? And do you think that that's a viable opportunity for our population, no matter what their age?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much what we have for retired people, right? We do have guaranteed incomes. We have pensions and we have old age security. So I think arguably that's what it is. You know, I have mixed feelings about about using a basic income. There's so many different models of it. You could give it to everybody and then tax it away from everybody if they're above a certain income threshold, which I believe is what we used to do with some of the family allowances and the like. Or you could just give it to everybody. But I think that that's really expensive, and you would probably be making trade-offs. Say, okay, everybody gets this $2,000 in the mail every month, but what do we give up in terms of, do we have no more libraries? Do we have no more parks? Because, you know, somebody has to pay for this. So it's a very, very complicated kind of a question. I guess the model I would be most comfortable with is if you have to, give it to everybody because that creates some stability. And that's what we did at the early part of the pandemic. And then try and keep tabs on it so that you do end up taxing back some of it for people who really don't need the extra $2,000. I mean, somebody who's already making a really high salary, an extra $24,000 a year could go back in the economy, or perhaps would be better off not being mailed to them in the first place. And yeah, the experiments we've seen in other countries have been pretty mixed, too, in terms of whether they worked.
Yes, I looked at the one from Finland from years ago, and they stopped doing it as well. It just didn't make fiscal sense. That's, it's an interesting concept, but I wonder, will it prevent people from working, or will it help people to find jobs that are part-time and pay less and keep them still having money to live on?
I don't love the idea of it, because it almost seems like we're accepting that there are some people who cannot be employed. And I don't accept that, right? That's some people say we need it because in the robot future, there will not be jobs for everybody and we have to put this in. And I don't think my thinking is there as yet. So I can see it as a stabilizer. And I do think it worked early in the pandemic. I think that was a good experiment when we sent out checks, no questions asked. But as a long-term thing going forward, I don't know if that's the best path.
Yes, I question that too. I find it an interesting dilemma to be in, certainly for people who work with those who are vulnerable, no matter their age or are poor, it becomes an issue of equality, et cetera. It's a very difficult, very, very difficult issue. I find it quite an overwhelming thing to think about. At any rate, this is the end of our interview. Thank you, Linda. It has been so interesting to hear your views on older workers, on retirement, on income, on employers. And I'm very happy to hear that you believe that we should focus on the purpose of our work, because that gives us a reason to be there and keep working. I really appreciate that very much.
Well, thanks for having me, Marilyn.
Thank you very much for your time. Much appreciated.
You have been listening to Madeline Corelli talking with economist Linda Nazareth. Be sure to listen next week at this time, when Madeline will be in conversation with another expert on a topic that will help us deal with aging, a new reality, right here on Northumberland 89.7. Truly Local Radio.